Welcome to Local Talk, a special local talk concerning the COVID-19 response on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Pat Schlarbaum, and with co-host Ann Kinzel with the Ames Progressive Alliance on Zoom. Hello, Ann.
Morning, Pat.
It's so wonderful we can get together again to provide factual information to our community through this technology. So thank you for listening.
Since March 17th, when Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds announced a public health disaster, Iowans, like the rest of the world, have been engaged in adaptations to a growing worldwide pandemic. Today, through the technology of Zoom, we'll be joined by Jean Cressy, who is with the United Way, Susan Guiazda, City of Ames Public Relations Officer, who will bring with her Julie Gould, Planner and Neighborhood Association Liaison for the City of Ames. And, of course, we'll finish our show with Anna Banana with her heart-to-heart messages from KHOI, because we are the heart of Iowa.
And the weather forecast includes rain throughout this Friday. Temperatures will fall to 38 this afternoon, and it will be breezy. Temperatures will improve into the 50s and 60s with sun this weekend and back to the 70s next week. And now let's welcome Dennis Hart with his recap of the week in the news gleaned from the stories in our Ames Tribune.
Thanks very much. It's been another week of coronavirus-dominated news on the pages of the Ames Tribune. Let's take it step by step, starting with last Friday when the Trib reported that the McFarland Clinic would start reducing its staff in order to adapt to changes caused by the pandemic. The clinic has shifted its focus in recent weeks from a preventive care service model to one that focuses on chronic and acute care, and that has resulted in a drop in patient visits. It was also word that the Story County Jail had released nonviolent inmates in order to try to avoid a spread of the coronavirus throughout the jail. The Tribune also reported that animals were still being adopted at the Ames Animal Shelter in spite of the facility having shut its doors to the public until May 15th. Since the shelter shut down on March 16th, 12 cats and 3 dogs had been adopted as of last Friday. And last Friday's paper had several photos from the Fellows Elementary School Teacher Parade that wound its way through several streets in Ames on Thursday. Teachers drove by in cars and waved to those who stood alongside the streets waving back. At least one teacher's car had a sign on a window that read, "We miss you." Saturday's paper brought word that the Story County Board of Supervisors had decided to close the county's Department of Health Services building on South Kellogg Avenue in Ames to the public effective immediately. That decision was prompted by a request from Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds to close down all health service buildings in an effort to slow the spread of the coronavirus. There was also word about how local golf courses were handling things in the wake of the coronavirus outbreak. The Vinker Memorial Golf Course, which is owned by Iowa State University, is the only course to have opened for the season. The course has put into effect sanitary and safety protocols to minimize the possibility of the virus spreading. Among other things, only one person is allowed inside the clubhouse at a time, only one person is allowed to ride in each cart, and flag sticks on greens have been removed to make sure players are only touching their golf balls. Meanwhile, the Coldwater Golf Links and the Homewood Municipal Course in Ames will not open until at least April 15th, and that may get pushed back even farther. There was also word Saturday that both Fairway and Hy-Vee stores had announced plans to provide their hourly employees with bonuses and paid time off because of their increased workloads caused by the coronavirus outbreak. Hy-Vee said it would pay employees 10% bonuses and offer new benefits. Fairway said it would provide employees the option of cash bonuses or paid time off to spend with their families. One more note from last Saturday's paper, word that the Ames Zoning Board of Adjustment had voted to grant incoming internet service provider Metronet a special permit to build a 70-foot communications tower at a site in Ames. The action by the Zoning Board came just days after the City Council had approved Metronet's site development plan at 901 North 4th Street. The company has already started installing cable underground and on overhead poles in various coverage areas, including Eisenhower Avenue to the border of Ada Hayden Lake. Sunday's paper reported that Iowa State University had sent out a call to gather supplies from around the university to help medical professionals on the front line in the fight against the coronavirus. A team began taking inventory of all personal protective equipment and set aside hundreds of respirators for the university's Student Health Center. Among the items collected, masks, gloves, gowns, and more from labs and departments around campus. After everything is inventoried, the university will contact Story County officials to get the supplies shipped to medical locations in need. Also Sunday, word that the upcoming June 2nd primary election in Iowa will still take place. Iowa law mandates that federal races cannot be postponed or delayed, And the Secretary of State said that any fears of the primaries being canceled are misleading and wrong. Story County Auditor Lucy Martin has been pushing for voters to consider a wide-scale shift to absentee mail-in ballots. And Martin said polling places around Ames for the June primary likely would be consolidated. She also said that even though county offices are closed to the public because of the coronavirus, her office is working through its website to ensure that county residents are registered and ready to vote. There was more Sunday, including word that even though school has been canceled in Ames to slow the spread of the coronavirus, online educational activities are now being offered to families who are looking to stay busy during the district's off period. The school district has unveiled a new website that compiles activities for students of all ages in the district. The website will be updated twice a week for families. And one more note from Sunday's paper. The Trib devoted virtually its entire front page to pictures showing examples of what the paper called life with coronavirus. These are photos showing various aspects of our current life and times in Ames, such things as empty restaurants, almost empty Sci-Ride buses, and even a sidewalk filled with chalked messages of hope. You can see all of it in Sunday's Tribune. Tuesday's paper brought the news that a well-known former Ames high school coach had been transported to hospice in Ames on Monday after he had a massive heart attack. 82-year-old Dale Tramp was dean of students at Ames High for 4 decades, then continued as head sophomore football coach for years. In 2010, he was inducted into the Ames High Athletic Hall of Fame. He and his wife had been planning to move into Northcrest in Ames, and that's where he was taken to be in hospice. Tuesday's paper also brought word that the Village Inn restaurant on Lincoln Way in Ames had closed for good. It was a victim of the coronavirus. The owner, American Blue Ribbon Holdings, released a statement saying it was a difficult decision to make. It said the coronavirus outbreak had what it called an extraordinarily negative impact on the business. The company had already declared bankruptcy. Also Tuesday, word that Iowa State University was refunding 40% of residence hall contracts and that the university would not be issuing refunds for tuition for the spring semester. Last month, the university had announced plans to extend online courses for the rest of the semester and plans to cancel spring commencement. And there was also word that in spite of the coronavirus, local county and city officials were hoping that months of promotion and preparation would pay off this past Wednesday, April 1st, which had been designated as Census Day across the country. Earlier this week, Story County's response rate for the census was 41%, which was higher than the state's or the nation's. And there was more news in Tuesday's Trib, including word that the Nevada Fire Department was asking for help to find the arsonist responsible for 5 separate ditch fires in recent weeks. Those fires took place on a 1-mile stretch near T Avenue and 11th Street. And there was a report that an Ames man had been arrested after authorities said he assaulted his girlfriend and threatened to kill her and her son. The suspect was identified as 26-year-old Scott Martin. Wednesday's Trib reported that Ames police were investigating anti-Semitic graffiti that had been painted onto the bridge leading to the tennis courts at Brookside Park. The graffiti included a swastika along with various phrases and explicit words. Ames Police Commander Jason Tuttle called the graffiti disgusting and said, in his words, "We don't need that kind of stuff in our community." Also Wednesday, word that Dakota Access was moving forward to eventually increase the capacity of the flow of oil through its pipeline from 550,000 barrels a day to a bit more than 1 million barrels. The Iowa Utilities Board recently gave its approval for that increase. Dakota Access said as part of the increase, it will move forward with modifications to its Cambridge pumping station. There was also a story about a local photographer who is giving back to area food pantries by offering social distance photo sessions to families, then donating money from the photos to the United Way, where it will go back to local area food pantries. Photographer Lindsay Prescott said she will remain 10 feet away from families and take their pictures from doorways, driveways, or the lawn. And one more story from Wednesday's paper, a report about how the Ames Fire Department had brought joy to a local birthday boy. It all took place last Sunday afternoon when 4-year-old Kaufman Burt was drawing on the family's driveway with chalk when his parents told him to look down the street. When he did, an Ames fire truck and another department truck turned on their sirens for him. Of course, Kaufman's family had set the whole thing up as a way to brighten things up on the boy's special day in this time of so much uncertainty in Ames and everywhere else. Thursday's paper, yesterday's, brought word that 2 more cases of the coronavirus had been confirmed in Story County, bringing the number of cases to 4 so far. Details about the infected individuals were not released, except to say they were older adults between the ages of 61 and 80. They both had been tested at McFarland Clinic. Also yesterday, Word that a team at Iowa State University is partnering with Alliant Energy to create and distribute up to 2,000 face shields for hospitals in Iowa. And there was word that Iowa State University's veterinary diagnostic lab is sharing its equipment with the state of Iowa's hygienic lab in order to help speed up the results of tests for the coronavirus. There was also a story that Story County's Emergency Management Agency is asking for the public's help in supporting local health care agencies and first responders with personal protective equipment during this coronavirus outbreak. And there was word that Iowa State University athletic coaches would take temporary pay cuts as the athletics department tries to make up for lost revenue due to the canceled Big 12 and NCAA basketball tournaments. The athletics department also announced a freeze on ticket prices on all sports. And among the stories you'll read today, Friday, word that schools will stay closed through at least April 30th by order of Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds. And that's it, my friends. Your summary of another consequential week of news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, planning to be right back here on Monday with word about what's been going on around the state this week. Between now and then, please stay safe and take care of yourself and your loved ones as we all work to try to get through this together.
Love is but a song we sing, fears we will die. You can make mountains ring, or make angels cry. Though the bird is on the wing, and you may not know why. Some may go, he will surely be his. When the one that left us here returns for us at last, we are but a moment's sunlight fading in the breath.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your recap of the news this week in the Ames Tribune with a music interlude by the Youngbloods. Get together right now. And now joining us through Zoom is Ann Kinzel with the Ames Progressive Alliance and Jean Cressy from the United Way.
So, Jean, the United Way has been quite active in the COVID crisis. Can you talk a little bit about how you're partnering with local institutions to help people in this in these dark times?
Well, good morning, Anne, and good morning to all the listeners. United Way of Story County is definitely involved. We're convening many different partners early on, March 17th or 16th, I guess, when the schools announced that they were closing. We had a call from one of our medical providers asking about childcare for essential workers. So as childcare centers started to close, we knew that we were limited in spots. And so we've been working with two partners on trying to figure out where those workers can take their children. We've got a few options available. We've been working with the Operations Center, affectionately known as EOC, to make sure that we're keeping all of those essential workers and the employers up to date. So they've broken it down into three tiers. And so we've now reached out to all three tiers of those employers, letting them know what their options are. In addition to that, we've been working with food security. That's always been part of who we are. We facilitate the food pantry collaboration and the hunger collaboration. And so we've been working with all of the 20 plus food pantries around the county. I want to back up a little bit and just say that We reached out to our 32 partner agencies as well right away to see what how their services were impacted. And we now have on our website, just as real time as possible, what opportunities are available for individuals and updates as far as what services are available. So that's on our website, uwstory.org.
So when you say you're providing child care for, helping provide child care for essential workers and coordinating that, first of all, who are the essential workers?
Well, the tier one, of course, would be everybody that you think of in the medical community. So all of those that are responding at Mary Greeley Medical Center, and they know within their own organization who needs to be there to keep the operations going. So it might be somebody that is actually making sure that the electricity is on in the building, as well as the healthcare providers themselves, the nursing staff, the doctors, et cetera. So in addition to that, we also need our fire departments to be up and running. We need our police to be up and running. So you start thinking about who are those essential services. And then as you go down through the tiers, you just think about if it wasn't here today or tomorrow, what would happen? So the grocery stores, of course, the volunteer fire department, of course, are all essential workers. The water treatment plant is essential. The electrical are essential. So all of those individuals that help keep our city running the way that we're used to and the way that we need it to be, and most importantly, to keep us all safe.
So where is this care being provided, and who is overseeing the care of the children?
Right now, there are a few child care centers still open. The EOC did reach out, Mary Greeley Medical Center and Story County Extension. Both do babysitting certificate program. And so they reached out to their babysitters. We've had high school kids kind of group up and say, hey, we could provide in-home care if needed. And so all that information has been collected at the EOC. We're pushing that out to the HR departments or the contacts at each of those workers, businesses, and then they're sharing that in turn with their employees. We do have one child care center that stayed open, ChildServe. After doing some shuffling and seeing who they had within their unit, they were able to free up a few rooms that they can dedicate to those essential, to the children of those essential workers. So they could take up to, I believe, 20. We've been working with ACPC, so you might have known it as Ames Community Preschool Center. They did close initially. When the school district closed, all the school districts, we have seven in Story County, when they closed, that took about 700 slots out of the arena for childcare. So all those before and after school programs, they're actually housed in the schools, had to close. ACPC eventually made that decision to close. So they're working, they're scaling up so that they could potentially be that childcare center, if you will. And keep in mind, there's some protective factors that we need to look at. So not more than 10 children in a room. They need to be clustered and stay in that room. So no communal meals, any time outside on the playground would need to have staff come out and wipe things down, et cetera. So I think the first week we had a little buy time because everybody had plans already for spring break because there was so much that was closed. And in the interim, I think a lot of those healthcare providers especially came up with alternate solutions on their own. So we are setting this up as a backup. In addition, the center, the child care center, referral and resources, they are monitoring all of the in-home providers, both licensed and not licensed, to find out what slots that they would have available, because the state did lift that requirement. You can only have so many children in your care. So they lifted that a bit, so there's some slots open. So folks that need childcare can go to CCRNR's website and find if there's a location here in Story County.
What does CCNR stand for?
Childcare Referral and Resources.
Okay, so they can Google that, Childcare Referral and Resources.
That's on our website too.
Oh, perfect. So another essential part of our lives, of course, is the ability to have food, access to food, and be fed if we need to be fed. How is the United Way helping our community cope with issues of, say, food insecurity or food shortage, food delivery? in the COVID-19 crisis.
Right. So as you know, the school districts are operating now under what's called the Summer Food Service Program. So they're providing that grab-and-go breakfast and lunch. That's on all of the websites as well, all the school district websites. So we're talking about what needs to happen. We work with the food pantries directly. So our team member, Annika Mundell, is working with all the food pantries to find out what are their needs. We typically host a Live United food drive. We've done it for about 15 years in the late spring because we know that food pantries need to stock their shelves before kiddos are out for the summer. And that was scheduled for the end of April, and we have about 80 businesses that participate as drop-off spots. We collect about 13 to 15,000 pounds of food in that way, and then we distribute that to the food pantries, and we also take cash donations at that time. So last year, we had a little over $8,000 in cash donations that we give to the food pantries. We knew when all this hit that that was not going to be an option for us to do the Live United Food Drive in the way that we've done it in the past. And we also knew the need was now. So we moved that up. We are calling it a virtual Live United Food Drive. So we're collecting money right now. If you go to that COVID-19 page and you scroll through all of the options, at the very bottom is your opportunity to donate to that Live United Food Drive. So I think last I heard, we were about a little over $4,200 in that food fund. We also wrote a grant to the Delta Dental Foundation. And I've been a grant writer for 34 years, and it's the first time I've ever found out the results of a grant within a week. So they are going to award us $5,000. So as soon as we get that money, we're going to push that out to the food pantries that are still in operation. And then they take that money, Ann, and they're able to purchase food from the Food Bank of Iowa. So the pantries are local. The bank is bigger, or the Iowa Food Bank is bigger. They serve about 53 counties, and they'll be able to purchase food from the food bank at about 16 cents a pound. So those donations really go very far.
That's good to hear.
Coordinate pickups if we can from the food bank.
And yeah, I was wondering. Go ahead, Pat.
Well, it's for some time now, I've always thought of the United Way as the premier non-governmental organization when it comes to providing citizens a safety net. So I'm curious of when the United Way was established, and why do you think that role of being the premier assistance to our citizens has come about?
We were established in 1953, and I think that the Ames community and the Story County community are why we're able to do what we're doing. And I just want to back up a little bit to 1953, the first fundraising campaign that they held. They had a goal of about $28,000. They asked the community to leave their porch lights on. And in the course of about 9 days, 100 volunteers went door to door. They raised over $38,000. So that's the reason why we're able to do what we're doing, is because we have such a generous community that does so much. So thank you for those kind words, Pat.
Well, thank you for all that you do for the citizens of Iowa, yeah, and all across the nation.
Well, we have Gene Cressy from the United Way as our guest today. My next question, Gene, has to do with an often overlooked segment of our community, and that is immigrants. How is the United Way helping its partners, or perhaps directly, immigrants cope with the COVID-19 situation in Iowa?
Well, as you know, when employees are laid off or they're furloughed and they can apply for unemployment, that isn't the case necessarily for immigrants. And so if they're not working at the restaurant or the grocery store or wherever, they're not able to apply for that. So one of our staff members, Annika Mundell, who is our community impact director, reached out to some partners and talked about the situation and talked about the need. And so St. Cecilia's Community Church had taken the lead on a fund. So they're in the process of raising money to help support individuals that fall into that category. We were just a convener of that conversation. There's many partners involved. I'm going to rattle them off real quick. So that Ames Interfaith Refugee Alliance, the Ames Sanctuary Interfaith Partnership, the Ames United Church of Christ, Amos from Ames, Bethesda, Lutheran Church, the Christ Community Church, St. Thomas, and many other partners are working to raise money to support those individuals. And that's on our website as well, to see how you can donate to that fund. It's not part of our fund, but it's that fund. And then how you can also maybe steer people in that direction if they have those needs.
Well, that's an impressive list. Speaking of money, Jean, you had mentioned to me earlier about the CARES Act and the ability for nonprofits to tap into that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, nonprofits, yes, and small businesses. So one of the things that nonprofits need to look at is, you know, they're dependent on government funding. They're dependent on private donations. One of the things that we want to do is keep our nonprofits as whole as possible. But there's just not enough resources to do everything that we need to do. So within that fund or within that act, it's called the Payroll Protection Program. And that's an opportunity for nonprofits to work with lending institutions. It's considered a loan, but it's a forgivable loan. So if they're able to keep their staff whole for over a course of, I believe, 8 weeks, that would be a forgivable loan. So there's some technical things that you need to do, but reach out to your own financial institution first. And on the website, there is a list, on the CARES Act website, there's a list of those financial institutions on a global level or a national level that you can reach out if your local one isn't providing that service for you.
Well, that's good to know. This is a difficult time for not only individuals in our society, but the nonprofits that provide so much help in that sector. So we're going to close up with you, Jean, this morning. Do you have any last words that you'd like to share with the community as we move forward?
Well, first and foremost, thank you. Thank you to the City of Ames. Thank you to Story County. Thank you to the EOC. Thank you to the churches, the partners, the nonprofits, our many, many, many donors, and those that have reached out to us to say you're doing a great job. It has motivated us to continue to do what we're doing, and we are saddened by the fact that we have to do this kind of work, but we're very, very inspired by the fact that so many people are so very generous with their encouragement, their words, their donations, and their work, everything they're doing. Everybody's working hard. Thank you so much, Anne, for sharing this.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jean Cressy from the United Way, for all that you are doing for our community, and continue to be well and keep inspiring us.
You too. Thank you.
Yes, bye-bye. Thank you, Jean Cressy with United Way. If you're just joining us, this is KHOY, the heart of Iowa, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames. And I'm Pat Schlarbaum, your host for today with Ann Kinzel. And we've got Mike Murphy at the controls. And through the power of Zoom, we welcome Susan Gwiazda, Public Relations Officer with the City of Ames. Hello, Susan.
It's good to be here again. Thank you for letting us come on and share our information with your listeners.
And Susan, before we get started, I want to say thank you to you for coordinating such insightful and informative employees of our fair city of Ames. And we normally meet on the first Friday each month and appreciate your updates and happenings around the city. But now with the current COVID-19 response, we work with you each day during the week. And as you've coordinated the key city officials to appear on KHOY, it is an awesome responsibility you have embraced to keep the citizens of Ames informed during this COVID-19 response of 2020. So thank you, Susan. And with your guest today, Julie Gould, city planner and neighborhood association liaison. Hello, Julie.
Hello, good morning.
Hey, Julie. Good to hear your voice. It says here that you are our neighborhood liaison. Can you tell us what that means?
Yeah, I just help provide communication between the city and our established neighborhood associations, help them organize and let them know what programs are available to them and what the city offers to a neighborhood association, and just really be a source of information and contact.
For some context, how many neighborhood associations do we have in Ames that are active?
We usually hold steady around an average of 25.
And what exactly is the role of a neighborhood association, shall we quickly say, in the normal times? And then where can we go in the new normal?
Yeah, in the normal times, you know, some of them are more active than others, but you'll see them working together, whether it be on a project in their neighborhood, in a park, or in the, you know, a neighborhood garden, or just basically keeping in contact with each other for communication of what may be happening as far as city projects in their neighborhood, or things along those lines, or just how they can help each other. It's a little more difficult now since contact is a little more limited, but I think we can still keep that open line of communication open and keep neighborhood associations very active through all the technology we have, and social distancing, I think, is still very possible to continue with activities.
So how could we use neighborhood associations in Ames, say, in a proactive way to enhance social connectedness while we're practicing physical distancing?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure everybody's glued to all these news resources and internet resources. And so I'm sure you've seen other communities, and here in Ames, people are out chalking on their sidewalks and putting teddy bears and rainbows in their doors and windows. And so something like that you can organize on a community, on a neighborhood level, very easily through email, an email list, or a Zoom meeting or something like that. You know, other neighborhoods, like I said, are active and do have corner gardens or maintain the parks in their neighborhoods. And those can be set up, you know, you can coordinate through apps like Zoom, like we're using this morning, or Slacker is a good one to assign tasks to each other. And even social distancing, a good, you know, sometimes that face-to-face communication is so important just to make them sure the message is clear and for a personal connection and our emotional health. So just standing across the street from each other or on the opposite sides of our driveways from each other is an easy way to stay apart but yet communicate easily.
That's a good point, Julie. Now, if I live in a neighborhood in Ames and I've not been active in my neighborhood association, but suddenly I feel the pull to do this at this difficult time, how would I find out what my neighborhood association is all about and who would I connect with?
They can contact myself and we can get them their neighborhood association contact. A lot of the neighborhood associations have an email contact with them, and sometimes an address. So we can get their contact information to you. They have email lists. They have Facebook groups. Some use the Nextdoor app. And we have neighborhoods that are very active that aren't an association officially registered with the city, but we do know they exist, and I do know some of those contacts as well.
So if people want to connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
An email, which is jgould@cityofames.org, or by phone, 239-5400.
And I think if someone goes to the City of Ames website and in the search directory, they can just put your name, Julie Gould, and come up with your contact information. Well, that's good to know.
And if I could add, sure, to be in a neighborhood association, you may, of course, as you said, you may be in one and not even realize it. The city actually lays out some guidelines of how we establish these associations. So they're mapped out. You have to provide geographic boundaries for your neighborhood association. So, Julie, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I believe we have an up-to-date map on the website that kind of shows you the geographic boundaries of all the associations that have registered. So it may be you have an active association, you didn't know about it, and you just need to make that connection. If you don't see your neighborhood on there, you know, talk with Julie about getting one established.
Would it be possible to find the map by just going to the City of Ames website and putting what neighborhood association in the search bar?
Yeah, it's easy to do. You can do it that way. Or if you're on the city's main website under that living tab at the top, when the menu drops down, you just go to neighborhoods and it's all in there too. There's other links as well, but the neighborhood map is located in under that living tab.
Now, in your contacts with neighborhood associations, Julie, have you found one that's been particularly active during the crisis or particularly creative, or what can you share with us?
I haven't had any direct contact with a neighborhood association that is doing anything specific to their neighborhood right now. You know, some, if they wanted to, that's something very easy to do. You know, unfortunately, an activity like Stash the Trash, unfortunately, was canceled this year. But that would be something very easy to organize for your neighborhood and you know, provide a social connection if everybody wanted to pick up their own little area. Or you could do some sidewalk chalk theme or something in the windows like that to, again, promote connectedness at this time. I know it's not local to Ames, but one neighborhood that I've seen in another city, they're having the elderly in their neighborhood that may need a grocery delivery or a service put a certain color in their window. And by that, then another neighbor will know that that person needs something, whether they're elderly or immunocompromised or something along those lines. So there are definitely things, ways to get creative right now.
Certainly our neighborhood associations can have lots of, generate some fun activities, but they can also be a real lifeline potentially for neighbors who'd have a difficult time going to the essential services. It'll be interesting if we see that in Ames. I'm sure lots of people are doing it on an informal basis.
Yeah, sometimes just reaching out, even if you don't know that neighbor really well, a text if you do have their number, a phone call, maybe drop a note on their front porch, because at this time we all want to respect everybody's distance and their comfort level right now. So maybe that initial contact, if you're reaching out to see if somebody needs something, is a little more indirect, that first contact.
It's amazing how so many of us are rediscovering the phone as means of direct communication through our voices.
Boy, that's
it is, and it's kind of nice.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And this is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI. It seems like as the campaign evolves with the COVID-19 response, that there will be more and more of the network or community activities evolving. So please keep us in mind, if you could, Julie Gold, with the Neighborhood Association, to share those success stories with us of what's working in different areas around the city of Ames. And we can all get through this together. But I feel like your role can be very essential in sharing what's working and what's, the really positive outreach to our elderly, also to our youth that are being homeschooled now. So thank you so much for that, Julie Gould.
As a planner, Julie, what other responsibilities do you have with the city that are helping in this COVID-19 crisis?
City Hall is closed to the public right now, but we are still operating on as normal level as we can. So we're still taking those development applications as they come in through mail or online. So we're still reviewing some site plans and some final plats and subdivisions right now. That's our common day-to-day work. It's slowed down a little bit, but we are still processing all those applications. Meetings are now closed to the public, the public hearings like City Council and Planning and Zoning Commission, but we've made arrangements so that you can call into those if you're the applicant or the public. So we're trying to all work around this new normal as best we can, but still keep business as usual.
Well, yes, there will be economic activity that will resume at some point. Speaking of which, are you involved at all with the need to get people to participate in the census? What can you share with us about that?
That is more Susan.
Oh, okay. Susan.
Area of expertise.
Yeah, absolutely. The census still marches forward, and we just passed Census Day on April 1st. Again, I'm just encouraging everybody, when you're home isolating, go online, fill out your census form. 2020census.gov is an easy connection. If you have misplaced your invitation that had a custom code in it, don't worry. You can still fill out your census form online. There's a link that says, forgot my code or don't know my code. Click that link, fill out your census form the best of your ability and turn it in. I've heard many, many people, including myself, my own experience, 10 minutes or less. It's not difficult. Fill it out. And another thing to do for fun when you're self-isolating is go to the census response map. It can break down by state how well different parts of the country are responding to census. You can break it down by city, how well certain cities are responding to the census. And I particularly like to check Ames versus Iowa City, and we're doing better. So let's keep it
game on. Game on. Lots of people tell us to participate in the census, but maybe our two guests this morning can address why is it important to the city of Ames and those of us in our Story County communities to participate in the decennial census.
So the census is the mechanism that dictates how $675 billion annually are distributed from the federal government to the states and cities. That's a lot of money on the line. That money goes to things like transportation, infrastructure, housing, healthcare, education. It funds our own public transit system, SkyRide. Julie can talk about it. It goes to community development block grant cities, entitlement cities. And the census also dictates political representation. So my favorite example is always in 2010, we had more state representatives in Iowa than we do now, because although Iowa grew as a state, we did not grow as fast as the states around us, and we lost a state representative. So it also dictates redistricting. So even your city council wards can be redistricted based on census numbers. So there's a lot at stake here. It is very important. It impacts cities for years to come. It's a relatively little thing to ask of citizens. I don't like to hammer on this one, but it is the law, so we really should do it. It's not optional. It is really something that you need to do. And the more that we do now, the less we have, the less we leave on the backs of our census enumerators, who actually will have to come door to door. Right now, that's something that people probably don't want to knock on their door. Census will probably start the door knocking in the summer. They'll, of course, adjust as the circumstances dictate, but it's all coming, and we can eliminate that if we just turn in our census forms now.
Well, that's a good reminder, Susan, about our responsibilities as residents of Ames and the United States, and, of course, the state of Iowa. And as you say, it's not a huge effort, especially since we're all pretty much at home. So thank you for sharing that information about the census. Julie, we're coming to the close of our broadcast this morning with you and Susan, and I'd like each of you, if you could, to share some last words with us today to take into the weekend about how the city of Ames and can cope on with this crisis, and perhaps personal experiences that could give us a boost.
You know, the city of Ames, like I mentioned earlier, we're trying to go about business as usual as much as possible and performing all of our normal city duties. We're getting phone calls from people still, so trying to do activities in their own yard and making sure that they're in compliance with all the city regulations. So that's a great reminder to be outdoors. Again, you know, we always want to respect each other's safety and distances at this time, but you can have that a great conversation again just across the driveway width or across the street, and reach out to your neighbors and your neighborhood associations and get active as much as you can at this time as far as building connections.
Susan, any last thoughts?
Yeah, I did have something I wanted to add, and you're hearing it first. I haven't even released this information. As much as we want people to get out and enjoy the outside, we are experiencing some concern about playgrounds. And so as of today, Parks and Recreation and the Ames Community School District will be closing their playgrounds to the public. You can still go to an Ames park and walk the paths. You can still go sit on a park bench, but we are just concerned that too many people are congregating. You know, we have guidelines that say 10 or fewer. Playgrounds are not sanitized, and we are at the point where we feel like the safest action would be simply to shut them down. So that will start today.
Thank you, Susan.
So thank you, Susan Guiasta, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, and guest Julie Gould, the Neighborhood Association Planner and Liaison. Thank you so much, Julie and Susan.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
And now, is Anna Banana on tap?
Yes. Greetings, my KHOI family.
Yeah.
So it is Anna Banana with KHOI's heart-to-heart messages. And if you know me, then you're more than likely to know my dog, who is named Floyd, like Pink Floyd, Floyd. He was born in Uttoxeter, England, on April 4, 2016. Yes, this means Floyd's birthday is coming up. And so I must give a birthday shout out. And with this social distancing, I may have a birthday party for Mr. Floyd. So Floyd has adjusted to being in America and Ames quite well, although he was not fond of the polar vortex of summer or the dog days of summer. Ha ha, you get it? Dog days of summer. Boy, the dog not liking the heart, the heat or humidity in Iowa. Okay, Anna Banana, focus. For all those animal lovers out there, I think you're going to love these heart-to-heart messages. This heart-to-heart message is from Jeannie Fleming Gifford, who is the volunteer publicity coordinator for Guiding Eyes for the Blind, an organization that provides trained guide dogs for the visually impaired throughout the U.S. and 12 foreign countries. Her message reads as follows. Today we're thinking of those who train the dog to change lives. When you see a service dog working, have you ever thought about how that dog gains the skills they need? From the time they are 8 weeks old, these pups are trained with a purpose. It takes expertise, patience, and a day after giving commitment. The result? A dog that can help a person change a life. Thank you, trainers. You make a difference every day in the lives of those in our community. So thank you, Jeannie, for this heart-to-heart message. Jeannie is such a loving and kind person who is incredibly busy with her work and family. And she's got a new puppy in training named Mason, who is so cute. So Jeannie is a executive director of an arts organization. She's been posting pictures of Mason, her new puppy, in a dance studio. And he's checking himself out in the mirrors, and it is so adorable and so much fun to watch. So speaking of fun, John Michelson, who serves on the Iowa ABLE Foundation Board of Directors, has a heart-to-heart message from a goat. Yep, you heard right. So I sat next to John at my very first board meeting, and when I asked him, what are you doing after this meeting, he said, oh, I have to go pick up a couple of chickens and a goat. Well, that is something you certainly do not hear every day. So without further ado, here's the next message from a goat. Edgar the Goat, host of the Daily Edgar on Facebook, you can find him on Facebook, hopes that all of his friends, fans, and their families stay safe and healthy in the days ahead. Let me just read that because I messed it up. Sorry, Edgar. Edgar the Goat hopes that all of his friends, fans, and their families stay safe and healthy in the days ahead. So thank you, Edgar the Goat, and John for helping in interpreting the bleeding to bring us this heart-to-heart message. And Edgar, we appreciate your best wishes. So my final message for the day comes from Barbara Wright, an attorney, passionate children's advocate, and we met because she volunteered for the children's law firm with the custody advocacy program and as a board member when I worked there. Barbara is an amazing dancer. She loves to hike. She's super smart. She's kind. She's generous and a gorgeous blonde. Wait a second. This is not heart-to-heart matchmaking, Anna Banana. It's heart-to-heart messages. But for those of you out there, if you know a great guy who I could introduce to Barbara, let me know. I'm just saying. Okay. Back to Barbara's heart-to-heart message. The law of unintended consequences works in strange and mysterious ways. As awful as this coronavirus is for human inhabitants of the earth, it appears to be creating unexpected opportunities for canine and feline counterparts. I'm an extrovert who lives alone, and social isolation to me is the equivalent of forcing an introvert to go to a huge New Year's Eve party every single day. So recently, with some extra time on my hands, a desire for someone to talk to other than myself, and a need to be outside on a regular basis, I decided to foster a dog. I've always owned dogs, but don't, in my normal life right now, have time to properly care for one. But now I thought I had the time. And so I signed up to be a foster dog mom, passed the test. Yes, there was a test, and went to the shelter. I decided to start with a weekend staycation for a dog who just needed a break from the shelter, with the idea that I would foster the dog longer term, and if we were a good match, I would adopt that dog. I told the shelter to give me the dog that they thought could benefit the most from some time away from the shelter, and that's how I met Woody. Woody, in my view, was a terrible name for a dog with such dignity, and he didn't seem to know it, or at least he wouldn't acknowledge that that was his name. And he had dignity and space despite his, well, circumstances. They told me he was 12, and one look at him made it clear that he had a terrible skin condition. The look made it clear only slightly before the nose made it clear. He had a terrible skin condition. He basically seemed to be rotting. Ew. He had huge bald spots, which were angry and red and swollen, and he scratched constantly. Yes, I brought home a smelly, old, itchy, bald man. As one of my friends said, he's just like the men I date, only nicer. You know how it went. We fell in love, and by the end of the weekend, there was no way I was bringing the sweet gentleman back to the shelter. His meds were starting to work, and we took the long, lovely walks around the neighborhood. He had a jaunty, bouncy walk that made his ears flop up and down, and it was like walking a rock star. Everyone commented on him. Apparently, this is not uncommon in the time of Corona. The shelter I went to has seen a dramatic increase in fosters, and all their animals have found at least temporary homes. And I understand this is a nationwide phenomenon. Humans turning to animals out of a desire to help and a need for companionship. What a lovely thing to happen in the midst of all this turmoil. Alas, Woody and I were not to be, for the best of reasons possible. Woody's longtime and long-lost family saw him on the shelter website and came for him. I wasn't around for the reunion, but in my lonely moments without him, I like to imagine how it felt for his family and for him. Such joy and happiness at being together again. Woody and I helped each other. I can still smell him when I come into the door, and I don't mind. I will always have fond thoughts of our time together, and will always remember that good things can come out of bad things in the most unexpected of ways. And I will be back at the shelter to find a new friend as soon as they need me. Thank you, Barbara, for your heart-to-heart message and helping us remember that every cloud does indeed have a silver lining. So I found this quote by the author of The Unbearable Lightness of Being that states, "Dogs are our link to a paradise. They don't know evil or jealousy or discontent. To sit with a dog on a hillside on a glorious afternoon is to be back in Eden where doing nothing was not boring. It was peace." So if we find ourselves sitting on a hillside at least 6 feet away from each other with our dog who doesn't know what COVID-19 is, he doesn't care about toilet paper, or about the economic impact of a lockdown. On a glorious afternoon in Ames, Iowa, remember, it doesn't have to be boring. It can be your peace. So I want to thank Barbara, John, and Jeannie for these heart-to-heart messages that have included dogs and a goat that expresses our love and appreciation for these furry family members and friends in our lives. So thank you also to those of you who have sent your heart-to-heart messages, and I promise I will read them on air or post them on Facebook. So if you'd like to respond to any of these messages today, I invite you to text me at Anna Banana at 515-809-0077. Or if you have a heart-to-heart message that you'd like to send to me, text me again at that number, 515-809-0077. Or you can email me at khoiradio@gmail.com and please put heart-to-heart in the subject line. So again, we hope that our heart-to-heart messages inspire you to connect to our community and our furry family members. And from the bottom of our hearts, we thank you for listening, and we send out our love to each of you from KHOI.
Thank you so much, Anna Banana, for another welcome installment of KHOI Heart-to-Heart Messages. Local talk airs at 7 a.m., rebroadcast at noon and 5 p.m. on Fridays at KHOI at 89.1 FM.
And remember that you can hear this program online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Yes, KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. This program was engineered today by Mike Murphy. Thank you, Michael. And thank you to Jean Cressy from the United Way and Susan Guiazda and Julie Gould from the City of Ames. I've been your host, Ann Kinzel, with the Ames Progressive Alliance, along with co-host Pat Schlarbaum.
Our theme song, as always, is backtracked by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You also heard Get Together by the Youngbloods. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team.
Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening today, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Thank you, Ann Kinzel.